In today's parliamentary elections in Israel, results are too close to call between Benjamin Netanyahu's Likud party and the white and blue party of Benny Gantz. Already second-guessing their campaigns, Netanyahu concedes that he probably should have held a rally in Wisconsin. President Trump plans to revoke a waiver that allows California to set its own vehicle emission standards. Yeah! You tell him, Mr. President, nobody tells Donald Trump how much toxic gas he can admit or emit. That was kind of the point of the joke. He can't admit it either. A simulation by Princeton University shows how a war between Russia and the U.S. would kill 34 million people in just 45 minutes, with the entire planet ultimately obliterated by a carpet of atomic bombs. You know, on second thought, maybe we should let Putin come to the G20 summit after all. What's it going to hurt? And finally, the New York Times reporter behind the now widely condemned article about Brett Kavanaugh also wrote an inappropriate tweet that stated, quote, "Having a penis thrust into your face at a drunken dorm party might seem like harmless fun," unquote. As a result of the tweet, the New York Times has seen twice as many requests for invitations for this year's Christmas party. The Trump Report starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Welcome to the Trump Report. I'm Christian Bott, joined by the wonderful Chelsea Galicia.
Hello there.
And the almost as good as Chelsea, Scott Moore.
True. Hi, guys.
Look, it's fair.
Great to be here.
We both aspire to be somewhere near as good.
Wow. But,
yes.
That's all we can do. Chelsea's very excited because there's a topic that she wants to talk about. We will get to it. So first of all, Scott, you missed out on our fun last week where we talked about the debate, which, as we stressed on that show, was only one night.
Right. One very long night.
I'll take one long night over two kind of long nights.
True.
It's still like two less hours, I think, than we got for the last ones. And just to sort of let you chime in, what is sort of an overall feeling? Do you feel like good night for somebody, bad night for somebody? Just because I think people are still talking about that debate, which will tell you what's going on this week.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there were more fumbles made by Biden again. There were a couple times where I cringed listening to him just with his word salad kind of mess up a few things here and there, and I was like, ugh. I thought Elizabeth Warren had a great night. I actually thought Beto had a really good night too. Beto, I keep saying it wrong.
Oh, interesting.
I think he had a good night because I think he got back to being passionate about an issue, and I think he took a very big risk about the buyback program for guns and was very passionate about it. And so I thought he had a better night than it was sort of like the old before, you know, when he was running for the Senate in Texas. So I think he had a better night. I think Julian Castro had a very bad night because I think he just looked like a mean girl when he attacked Biden.
Well, he tried to gotcha Biden on something that he didn't got him on.
Right. Yeah. But it also just came across as just really mean and it didn't look good. But no, overall, I think at the end of the day, pretty much what we've seen is the same people are going to be kind of in the same position in the polls and everything. So I don't think it was a game changer by any sense for anybody to really move too much from what they're already doing.
Yeah.
But there were definitely some people that had better nights than others. But overall, I don't think it's going to change the landscape too much.
Chelsea, how much more entertaining would it have been if Marianne Williamson had been there?
Oh my gosh. On a scale of 1 to 10, like a heartful 12.
Yeah. You would have DVR'd it and been watching it a few times ever since then.
I don't know about that.
That's true. Can't even joke about something that long. All right. So let's talk about Iran. And President Trump wants everybody to know that the U.S. is, quote, locked and loaded, depending on verification of an attack on a Saudi oil field. My first question is, obviously, we should always look out for the interests of our allies and the allies, by the way. But our allies, and also, especially when oil's involved, obviously, that gets a little bit extra of our attention. This is just sort of a general question I'll ask you first, Chelsea. If the response were exactly the same from a different president, would you feel any different than when you hear Donald Trump saying that he's ready for war?
No, actually, this is, it could be...
Even if it was President Obama?
Yeah, because I think he had some hawkish people in his ear.
I mean, let's never forget about President Obama, that when he's making jokes at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, he was like, oh, yeah, you guys got to go kill Bin Laden. All right, I'm going to go tell some jokes. I'll see you guys later. You know, I mean, and look, I kind of want a president that can make a hard decision like that, but still laugh and make fun of Donald Trump.
But the part that makes me nervous is the intelligence that's required to get word. Like, was it really Iran? Are we going to have a weapons of mass destruction?
And I think this is an important distinction. Intelligence as in mental abilities or top secret? Which one do you mean? Because really, I mean, yeah, it could go either way.
It's a good question, but it's both. And the underlying agenda, like, you know, the Bush administration and Cheney had this whole underlying agenda of why they wanted to go to war in the Middle East. And so they created the story of weapons of mass destruction, convinced the American public of it, and to a terrible result. So,
and convinced Congress of it.
Let's not forget about that detail, too. And so that's the scenario in my mind that comes up that makes me most nervous.
Scott, you're sort of a similar question. You know, you hear this. Do you feel like I really did almost say trumped up, and I didn't mean it? Do you feel like there's any possibility of sort of jumping to a conclusion because, like, yeah, you know, we're probably due for an armed conflict with Iran. You know, I don't mean for you personally. Mm. Do you feel like there's some of that going on in the White House?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think this is, you know, kind of going what you were saying, Chelsea, is it's sort of the excuse to be able to go in and say, okay, now we're going to go to war because of, you know, this drone attack with the oil facility in Saudi Arabia. And I also was really just kind of thrown by his tweet. I don't know when it was, over the weekend, I think it was, where he said, we're going to wait for Saudi Arabia to confirm this, and then we'll decide whatever they think. I was kind of like, why are we deferring to Saudi Arabia on something, and we're involved, again, going into something that should not even involve us at this point?
I think that if...
Especially because we don't have the oil excuse anymore.
Right, exactly. I mean, he can say that we're independent now with our oil, but then on the same time, we're going to go in and attack because of the oil situation. So it's, you can't have it both ways.
Well, you know, not everybody has a Tesla, you know. I mean, I think that there's still some need for oil. But my to sort of backtrack for a second.
I mean, not through methods that I really like, but we have access to our own.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, so, I think that that's a little bit more of a finite amount. So we would still need other people's oil eventually. But you're right. We could tap into the reserves. I don't know how long they would last us for, but I think that that's one option. But I wanted to just to go back to the idea that, you know, if there was a war, any kind of actual where you would classify it as war. How disappointed do you think John Bolton will be that this is when he got kicked out? Because, you know, look, all he's wanted his whole life is to be in charge of a war. I mean, except for, you know, having to actually, you know, be involved in Vietnam. But other than that.
I was actually going to say that we are a little bit safer because Bolton's not in the picture anymore.
Right. Well, you know, and so, look, we've talked a lot about how there's a lot of, acting cabinet positions. Mm-hmm. In some cases, it's like this might be one where perhaps you both feel like maybe we're better off having somebody that's basically just a substitute teacher that's like, look, I'm just here to take attendance and, everybody just read quietly to themselves. I don't want to make any waves.
Yeah, I just don't know who has filled that vacuum that was left by
Trump, probably.
And Pompeo. I'm not a big fan of Pompeo either, so it's not much better, but I do agree it's better not to have him there than in there. I've never liked him going way back, and then, of course, when he was in the second Bush administration, you know, that was
well good also. You know, I think that we're being a little harsh on John Bolton. You tell me who in politics has a better mustache. I don't think anybody. So, you know, look, give him that. You know what? Whatever you do, you can't take that away from him.
That's
so
true. I mean, you can read the emotions from that, from that mustache. He's got a frowny mustache right now because he's,
so I should assume that everyone in the audience and both of you spent your day glued to Corey Lewandowski testifying at the latest round of impeachment hearings. Did you listen to it this morning?
Listen to not the whole thing, but I did listen to a good hour of it. Yeah.
And was it a good hour?
Yeah, it was a good hour.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, he came ready to play. And he by did. That, I mean, you know, not give them what they wanted. in generally speaking, Chelsea, do you feel like it's worth continuing to go in on impeachment at this point? And there's sort of a follow up to that that we'll get to in a moment. But you know, the fact that we're having this latest round of hearings is, do you think it's a good thing? Let me start with a simple question there.
Do I think it's a good thing? Well, I believe that Congress has a job, mm-hmm. and part of that job is oversight, and that includes investigations, even ones that some people think are annoying. Some people are like, Congress, do your job and pass some laws. Well, you know, House Democrats have tried. There's a whole holdup of bills on Mitch McConnell's desk. He's, you know, sworn himself to be the grim reaper of any reasonable bill. So, you know, there's not much they can do on that front. They might as well do the rest of their job, which is the oversight. Investigations includes this one, sure enough. And I think it creates a beautiful backdrop for the conversation that we're going to have about Elizabeth Warren and her anti-corruption agenda. I think that this just sort of demonstrates kind of beautifully what the worst case can happen, that you can have an administration and people who just don't cooperate, who obfuscate, who, you know, hide things, who admit I lied to the media, i.e. I lied to the American public, and hey, that's okay. I think it creates actually a nice juxtaposition between the administration and the idea of democracy that Elizabeth Warren is going for in her corruption platform, I guess we can call it.
Scott.
Anti-corruption platform, I should call it.
No, yeah. I mean, I think that there are plenty of people from both parties who have been a part of the corruption platform for very long. We don't have the time to list everyone. Right. But Scott, do you think if it is this responsibility, should they also be like, look, not everyone in the House is focused on this. Let's show you some other stuff that we're actually doing. Do you think that could help? Because then you're not able to point like, well, there they go again with more impeachment hearings.
You could do a picture, a tweet of all the bills.
Yeah, do the side-by-side split screen, show them actually
Sitting on Mitch McConnell's desk.
And watch it sitting there, yes, in lifetime. But no, I think kind of what Chelsea was saying is true. The problem is of the optics is we know going into it that they're going to stonewall everybody they bring in that they've asked to come in to hear into the hearings is going to stonewall and not do their job. And it is very frustrating because, you know, it kind of goes back to even like Senate confirmation hearings. You know, you bring in somebody for an interview to be confirmed by the Senate, whatever position a president has brought forth. And you just think, okay, they're going to say whatever they're going to say to look in the best light. And then they're going to do their job and they're going to, you know, do the things that we don't agree with. It's kind of the same thing here. We know that we can bring the people in, but they're going to do everything in their power to avoid answering the real questions and the stonewall and to be difficult, which is very frustrating. And I wish, in a way, Democrats would grow a little bit more aggressive and just say, okay, you know, Lewandowski's in contempt. You know, get impeachment hearings going for Wilbur Ross. You know, there's a lot of other ones besides Trump that have done some very egregious things as well. But I think it is very important because what they're setting up here now is if they don't do anything, is basically when a Democrat president is in office, now they're going to be able to do the same thing and just be like, okay, we'll ignore all the subpoenas from a Republican Congress. We won't go and do anything. And now you have, you know, irreparable harm to the separations of power and the checks on each branch of government. And so it's a really bad scenario right now if they were to just let it go. And I feel in a way they should actually be more aggressive than less when it comes to the situation because it's just going to further deteriorate our democracy if they don't. And I think they can definitely show a good side-by-side of the bills they've worked on that have been sitting on Mitch McConnell's desk, the things they're doing as well as doing this impeachment inquiry. So, yeah, I think that they're capable of chewing gum and walking at the same time, and that's something they can show the American people.
Well, I think that you can also look around and you probably find people who can neither chew gum nor walk. You know, I don't know that they can do either one of those things. And, you know, we're talking about sort of this stack of, you know, this inbox on Mitch McConnell's desk. And it's interesting because anytime he's asked, he will immediately say like, oh, you know, I mean, I could do something on gun control, but this is really on Trump. You know what I mean? He's just like anybody they can pass the buck to, which I guess, look, I guess that's part of being a politician is like you blame everyone else and don't do any real work because all that can happen is if you do real work is you're going to disappoint people who vote for you. So, yeah, but I guess there's no real expectation of let's put it this way. Do you think Mitch McConnell will get anything done before just the end of this year?
No. And I can't believe that that is okay with people. I don't understand. Did I not say that Mitch McConnell is the least popular, the least favorable
of all?
How has he kept his job for this?
Well, he just needs to be popular in Kentucky.
Right, that's what I'm saying. All he needs to be is popular in Kentucky, and Republicans
even
know.
Among his own constituents, he's got a very low favorability rating. So, what the F is going on?
There was one poll that had Amy McGrath like a point apart from him right now, and which is shocking in Kentucky. But no, it's true. He is not very popular. However,
he's proudly the Grim Reaper of the anti-corruption bill that the House already passed.
Which you would think a guy who smokes as much as he does wouldn't invoke the Grim Reaper as quickly as he. I'm just saying, you know. No. I mean,
but how could you think it's a good look at all to say? To proudly be about squashing any anti-corruption movement.
Right, because he feels that his constituent doesn't care. His constituent doesn't care, and Republicans are against it, so he can basically do whatever he wants.
In all honesty, and this is not to single out where his constituents are from. I think that just a lot of senators would be like, yeah, you know what, this isn't a big issue for my constituents of any district. So I will say it's probably not a big issue for the people of Kentucky, but I don't think it's a big issue for a lot of others.
I just don't understand.
Yeah. For Republican, exactly. Yeah. I would still say it's Republican more than Democrats, though. And you also see a lot of independents that are supportive of that as well. Yeah. So,
which is why the Democrats should almost talk endlessly about nothing else but anti-corruption and use what's just happening around us every day as demonstration of what happens if we leave things unchecked.
So do you think that hearings like today feed into this anti-corruption movement?
They can if the candidates, you know, put this into context. Because some people can just look at this as, oh, they're still going after Trump about the Mueller report. But if they change the context, no. This is the House doing their job. There is oversight. The reason that the founding fathers put oversight into the Constitution was to keep our democracy up and functioning and free from corruption. So they just have to change the narrative around what people are saying, which is kind of what Trump is really good at doing. But it's not even changing the narrative. It's just bringing it into a larger lens than the one that a lot of people are looking at it through, which is that this is just about the Mueller investigation. No, this is about anti-corruption. This is about the health of our democracy, that this experiment at the moment of American democracy, of self-governance, is really not going that well, especially because, I mean, you can see statistically that even when a large number of Americans support something, it has the same 30% chance of becoming a law as something that's really unpopular, and that it depends just on how much lobbying, how much money gets thrown at candidates and specific causes. So it's happening all around us already, but this is every day we have an opportunity to see, this is exactly what is going on. They just have to be able to call it what it is and stop focusing on like the lens that's this big, which is like the Mueller report, and broaden out and see, this is the corruption in all of government, in all administrations. We're just seeing it really egregiously in the Trump administration, but this was going on in the Obama years, in the Bush years, everybody.
Well, not much going on there in the Clinton years. That was pretty above board.
There was no
questionable behavior or any shady pardons or anything. So I don't know what you're talking about. I feel like it just started right after that. Well, speaking of corruption, Chelsea, Elizabeth Warren has said her first priority as president would be ending government corruption.
So why the heck has it taken it this long?
So let me ask you the first question here is, before you saw that headline, where was she in terms of your favorites for candidate you're most excited about?
Yeah.
And did that change when you saw this headline?
Well, she had already for me eclipsed Bernie in the candidates that I prefer for president. I still am not sure that she is going to be able to connect with the majority of Americans, which is why I still think it might be smartest for the Democrats to run a campaign of, if we win the Senate that Elizabeth Warren will be the majority leader. That's not really a kind of campaign that, mm-hmm. that any party runs because it's voted on by the members. But, you know, we can make a good public campaign for it. And if Democrats were smart, they would take that and, you know, Chuck Schumer would be like, yes, mm-hmm. I will gladly pass the baton to her. And so she may be more powerful there. Because could you imagine if Joe Biden tries to, you know, get a, you know, somebody who's currently a gazillionaire from an oil company trying to be the head of the EPA and what the confirmation hearings on that would look like? Elizabeth, that it just wouldn't happen because, you know, when Senate Majority Leader Elizabeth Warren's got to lead hearings on this person, it's not going to go well. You won't even nominate that person. I don't think that you... Biden would. Hopefully. I don't know.
Right. I would hope not. Scott, I would say no.
That it would prevent corruption mm-hmm. just because you know that everything's got to go through her. I don't know why it's taken so long, but I am excited now that she's saying it's her first priority. Maybe she's just been tuning into the show and the light bulb has gone off.
She really feels like she can win you over. She and she's a little disappointed to hear this, that you still want her to, you know, be something other than president.
I mean, I would love for her to be president. The part of me that's doesn't have faith in the American people will settle for her being Senate Majority Leader.
What about vice president?
Nope.
All right. So you don't want her, you know, going to state funerals and, all right. I mean, this could be her initiative.
Nope.
You know?
I still would like Pete Buttigieg for that gig.
Yeah. I agree with you on that. I'm really total agreement with you with that, Chelsea, because I am concerned the same kind of thing that the American people are going to, there's, you know, it's almost, I don't want to say it's like a Hillary Clinton thing, but just the connection. It concerns me of just having the connection to her, because I even watched her last week and I just thought I really, really like her, and this article made me so excited. I was so excited because it was such common sense too. It was like such a great opportunity to really kind of clean the slate. But I think, are we going to get the independents? Are we going to get the people that we need? Are we going to get some of those Republicans over to vote for her? And I'm nervous. I mean, I'm nervous about Biden as well, but there is that nervous factor. As much as I love her and love her policies and love the fact that she's got really good plans, and this is really a great start, because like you've talked about for years at this point, but like we've talked about, that's the foundation to mm-hmm. getting everything else done. Mm-hmm. And if we can clean the slate and get that foundation going, then we can start rebuilding all the other.
And she can do this, the country, a huge favor by just talking almost nothing about this, forcing Biden to get on board mm-hmm. at least, so that if he does become president, that's what the American public is expecting. That, you know, because Biden, all he has to, he'll sign it. Elizabeth will make sure that it gets done, right? So that's my hope. My hope is that this eclipses healthcare as Americans' primary concern.
So you think that the next debate, they should spend the first 40 minutes talking about this instead of healthcare?
I couldn't explain to you how happy that would make me. I almost couldn't think of anything that would make me happier.
But
for somebody who just got engaged, congratulations.
Thank you.
I think hopefully he would like to hear, well, I can think of something that might make you happy.
I was thinking in the back of my head, I'm like, I'm almost happy he's not watching this, because if he hears me say there's nothing that can make me as happy, he might be a little disappointed. Yeah. So, but
you know, that could be tied with this. That's all right.
I mean, yes, tied. And I am really excited to be engaged to this man.
Sure.
So that just tells you how excited I would be for this, for this issue to take center stage. And you know, to borrow a little sentiment from Marianne Williamson, not just center stage, but like center of our hearts and our consciousness. I think that's where it belongs first.
Go ahead, Scott.
I'm saying that with a straight face.
Well, no,
good job.
Even though Christian really wants to throw something at me.
But I think the challenge, though, going forward, is to get the everyday American voter to be concerned about this and how it can be relatable to them. And that would be the challenge of the messaging, to be able to say, it's this important, this is why, so that people do think, oh, you know, more important than the pocketbook issues of the day and healthcare and the economy and jobs and the environment if and climate change. And, you know, so that's the thing where I think would be the biggest challenge of getting that everyday voter to understand that.
Anybody that can do it, it was a former special needs teacher and Harvard, you know, professor Elizabeth Warren can break things down and make Americans understand.
To Scott's point, I mean, convincing people that it's important is like, so what's important to you? I don't mean either of you, but mm-hmm. As a voter, what's important to you? Yeah, so gun control. Well, you know, corruption mm-hmm. would be something that is standing in the way of that.
Yes.
What's important to you? Oh, the environment, emission standards. Yeah, that's corrupt. So basically the fact that right. anything that is important to you is hindered by that. If you can, I don't know, you don't want to beat people over the head to get them to vote, but you know what? Maybe it'll help. I do want to go back to something that Scott was saying, because it is something that I've thought. And you can say it's an unfair comparison to compare Elizabeth Warren to Hillary, but the optics, I think it's very easy to cast her in the same way if you're the opposition. You're able to say, like, you know, here's this woman that's scolding you about things. Listen mm-hmm. to the way her voice sounds. And no, look, there you can discredit what she's actually saying. And I think it's different than, you know, people who aren't polling as well, but Tulsi Gabbard or Amy Klobuchar, and I know you don't like the way I say her name, but that's her name.
But that was actually the way you said it.
I know, you said it right this time. You said it right this time,
yeah. Yeah, Amy Kabuki. but, you know, I think, it's not about them practically as candidates, but were they candidates, you can't quite cast them the same way. And Elizabeth Warren is from that same, similar mold as Hillary.
I do not see it.
Well,
how?
I think that's probably because you like her.
But I didn't like Hillary.
Right. But I would say that the similarities would work against her in a general election. When we talked about the debate on Thursday, were you not surprised for me to say that it was a good night for her?
Yes.
I was very impressed by her. Mm-hmm. I know that she has support. When you see the sizes of the crowds that she's getting, it's very impressive because she doesn't have the budget to buy that many people to come. So that, look. Does anybody do that in politics? You know, how many people got free Latinos for Trump t-shirts mm-hmm. yesterday in New Mexico? You know, and, you know, like wrapped in $100 bill wrapped inside of it. You know, do you think how excited were they really to be there? Anyway, you know, so like these things happen. So I think that she is connecting with people in a way that I think I was quick to write her off, but I do think she has a lot of problems. And I don't know that she has convinced, you know, that video of her and her husband drinking a beer that people still talk about, and why do they still talk about it? Because it was just...
Because it was cringeworthy. It was like...
The only thing that was worse was Kristen Gillibrand at that gay bar being, gay rights! Like, yeah, that's a meme that I still see, you know? Like,
I missed that one.
That was all she did! She was just like, no one's talking to her! Yeah. And she's looking around, and she's like, just trying... Yeah. That's the only reason that Elizabeth Warren's video isn't the worst thing that I've seen this cycle is because of that one. And I don't – so I guess Chelsea, because you don't see her that way, let me ask Scott first. What do you think they can do to combat this? First of all, do you agree with my theory that whether it's fair or not – can she be painted with a similar brush as Hillary was?
Oh, no, I think 100%. That's part of my concern. And also, they're going to paint the socialism, you know, brush, and that she's so liberal. And, you know, again, that's my fear when
but
it comes to getting the...
She doesn't even use the socialism term. She's for capitalism.
I know, I agree with you, but the problem is that's how she'll be painted. And so those moderate Republican women that might be open to it, or some of the independents that might be open to voting for her, and some of the working class Republicans or Obama voters that then voted for Trump in the upper Midwest may be reluctant to vote for her. So I get concerned about the same kind of issues that Hillary had, but also the fact that they're going to be pushing this socialism liberal, extreme left.
If we talk anti-corruption, that's not a socialist thing.
But do you think that even if the nominee were Joe Biden or Bernie, obviously, but if Joe Biden were the nominee, would they also just not be like, oh, and this guy's a socialist, even though he's not?
That just doesn't make any sense at all.
But would Joe realize he's not a socialist? Would he? What? It's just a simple question. Look, the guy's teeth fell out on national television, or they almost fell out. Sorry. You know, so.
Although his makeup looked better. He looked very lean and, yeah. And you know, good, the lighting was better because the other debate, I was like, ooh.
I mean, I think the Biden campaign is like, any way we could broadcast this in standard def instead of high def.
Can we just put it on the records and then they can just play the records after?
You know, we didn't even get to that when we talked about it on Thursday to put up. You know what, though? Here's the thing. By saying that you should put on the records for your kids at night, I think he's just, you know, reaching out to hipsters because we know vinyl's back.
Right, then. Vinyl's back. It's vinyl's more back. Than CDs.
So he's actually ahead of the curve.
He is.
Chelsea, you might disagree with the hypothesis, but how do you think, what do you think is the best way to portray Elizabeth Warren as someone that, you know, basically the specific voters that Scott's talking about? You have, I don't know, let's just say somewhere close to half the country is going to vote for whoever's not Trump. Mm-hmm. But you still need to, you know, if that's 45, 47%, you do still need more. So how do you get the other people who maybe voted for Trump last time, maybe stayed home the last time? Mm-hmm. How do people get excited? And I know she's not your choice, but how do people get excited for Elizabeth Warren were she to be the nominee?
She is my choice, but she's not my choice with my lack of faith in the American
people. Right, right. But to convince people,
well, I would add too, like, okay, so what is your concern of the American people? Is it similar to mine, or what are your concern that they would not vote for her over Trump?
I mean, does she need to go on Jimmy Fallon and have a water balloon fight with him? I mean, do you think that would help?
I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know if it's just comforting to a large number of people to have a elder, experienced white male there.
Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to sneeze.
I know, I was like, are you sneezing? Are you going to cry?
But my answer to your question.
I'm crying for the white man. the Native American in the old commercial with the pollution where he has the one tear. That's me. I'm crying. I'm like, oh, the poor white man. Anyway, what were you going
to
say?
The answer to my question is flying this anti-corruption flag. There are videos from decades back of Elizabeth Warren talking about this kind of thing and consumer protection. It goes back, so it's not like it's a new thing. If Hillary were to have started talking about anti-corruption, there would be no history of her talking about it. You got Elizabeth Warren.
Well, it's not in her best interests.
Okay, I don't see how they're similar at all.
Right.
So I think, you know, getting those back from the, you know, the 8 tracks that they're on, those old sound bites and video clips of Elizabeth Warren talking about corruption, is enough to galvanize. I think independents are interested in anti-corruption.
They are. Mm-hmm.
I know that there are some Republicans who are mm-hmm. interested in anti-corruption. There are a lot of Trump supporters who liked the whole drain the swamp message that they thought was going to be anti-corruption, and people who thought that Trump couldn't be corrupted because of his money, which was a silly idea. But behind it, they were concerned about corruption. They were starting to see it. So I think that this one issue is enough to garner a lot of votes from different corners of the electorate.
So if you feel like if Democrats were able to make the point that President Trump did drain the swamp, but he and his friends were actually all standing there, so now no one can swim to get them away.
Nice.
Just thinking of that right now. So there you go. So that one's for free. Whoever wants to use that, you can go ahead and take that out on the campaign trail. So we only have how many more months until the, 13 and a half months until the election.
Wow.
Yeah. See, now it's almost real.
It's almost real.
When it's actually 2020, that's when it'll feel like, all right, yeah, now it's.
Well, I think when those first voters go in for the primaries.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, then you're like, okay, it's happening now.
Those people in New Hampshire, the town of like 8 people, we always have to see how
Dixon,
they vote. Knob?
Not sure.
Yeah, I'm confusing it with Punxsutawney Phil.
Yeah. It's around the same time, too.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, how is Punxsutawney Phil going to vote? That's
true.
Really what we
if
need
he
to see.
Sees right. His shadow.
Yes.
It's
4 more years of Trump. Yeah, so there you go. were you going to say something, Chelsea?
I can't remember.
Punxsutawney Phil obviously supersedes anything and everything. One of the things I did want to make sure we talked about today was there was a New York Times piece about Brett Kavanaugh. Now, this was a piece that was pushed to the opinion section, and it was not even the front of the opinion section. So I think that it wasn't this I don't know. I don't like to use the term smoking gun anymore. But it wasn't this bombshell, I think. But people are so desperate to grab at straws because they feel like the confirmation hearings for Brett Kavanaugh over the summer didn't, you know, we're not on the up and up. So they to have an opportunity to go back in, even though I guess the story was that the supposed witness didn't remember this happening. And I guess the Times then took that out of the story. And so it just ended up looking really bad for, yes, for the New York Times, but for everybody's like, see, we have to impeach Kavanaugh. And that ties into what I was talking about earlier. It's like, oh, it's just, so we're just going to go and try and impeach people. That's going to be what our focus is. So my first question for you, Chelsea, has a Supreme Court justice been impeached before?
Oh, that's a good question. And, you know,
should I ask Siri?
And I think you should actually ask Scott. Scott would know. You know, that's actually not something that we cover in law school.
Like
the history of the Supreme Court, as in like who's been impeached or not.
I thought there was, but now maybe not.
I would ask Siri. Whoa, my gosh. Listen to this. Ryan in the booth, who is furious that we didn't lead off the show talking about how Bruce Springsteen fell short of an EGOT at the Emmy Awards.
But the show itself did get
an EGOT. Yeah, but he's not an EGOT, and that's the key. What were you going to actually – what are the facts you were going to provide
there
us
with? There was a Supreme Court justice impeached
in
1805.
Right. Oh, I remember that. No, this is a good conversation. You can act like all of our audience right now. What's the name of the Supreme Court justice who was impeached?
Samuel Chase.
Well, it's such a boring name.
I have no idea. Know,
that's Samuel a great, that, it's a good Chase. Name. It's a good name.
He
it's
was
good...
chased out.
Ah, look at you!
Christian is rubbing off on me.
It's a good party conversation.
Yeah. Right? It's like, well, as we all know, Samuel Chase.
Yes.
So, all right. So there's a precedent that they could do it. Do you think this is another one of those? It's very similar to having impeachment hearings today and talking to court. No. In the sense that the motivation seems to be like, we're just going to keep trying to make this work. You know, we're convinced that there's something here, even though, and I mean, there was a very long series of tweets from, I think it was from Chuck Grassley himself, and just sort of explaining, like, you know, these are things that were brought to us. You know, the New York Times should have asked because, you know.
Sorry, you know what? I have to correct myself.
Oh no, is it not Samuel Chase?
Sorry, I just read. No, it was Samuel Chase. So this is what happened. It was the only time that there was an actual vote to impeach someone from the Supreme Court. And it fell short by 2 votes. Mm. Okay. 16 of the 18 votes.
He
was there for 6 more years. And he served that.
I don't want to discourage you for making jokes. I think the more Chelsea jokes, the better the show is. Anyway, well, that's all right, Ryan. That's a good. You know, it's
the same kind of thing. You know,
it's like Bill Clinton being impeached, but Johnson, not actually removed from office. Yeah. Right. So okay. So, you know, it went on his permanent record.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't know, actually. I don't know how much. I feel like there was less money in politics back then.
Yes. There was very much less money in politics back then. We should maybe even do a show that's dedicated to when, like, this level of corruption that I'm talking about, like, when did it begin? It has a certain time, and it has the whole, you know, late 70s, early 80s. I mean,
Probably earlier than that, but it's a good question.
I would say earlier than that, but it started getting worse in that time period.
Yes, when you had Alec and the Koch brothers and all of this, the idea, you know, Reagan said we have to partner with business, right? And that was a permission for business to get way entrenched into administrations, and that's when the level of equality, income equality, wealth inequality started getting very, very dramatic.
Well, I think it's
and when wages stopped. I mean, I could go on and on.
You could, but So, I mean, I feel like that would seem to make sense, but it could also be earlier than that. You know, I mean, who knows? Who knows what was going on during the New Deal? You know, I mean, we could really, you know, if we do that show, by the way, it means it's a slow week. But let's hope we have a slow week. Right? Wouldn't that be great?
It'd be that slow.
But back to this. It's not really a story. It's an opinion piece that it's a researched opinion piece that was in the New York Times. And I think that the New York Times doesn't look great from this story because they're starting to they're starting to play. I'm not trying to say that I think that the New York Times is fake news, but they're starting to, you know, you're starting to see a couple of these stories where they've done it and the Washington Post have done it. And where Trump's just able to point, he's like, see, I told you, look what they did. And this, I think, it plays into that. And I think that there should be a level of them being more careful. I think that that story that we actually didn't even get to a few weeks ago, where they had a headline that Trump urges unity, and then they changed the headline because people thought that I don't know if it was their subscriber base or the intelligentsia or whoever was like, nah, that's a little too nice to Trump. So they changed the headline, I think. Do you think, let me ask you first, Scott, do you think that that the New York Times and the media in particular need to be a little bit more careful because they are playing into that narrative ahead of a very big election year?
Mm-hmm. Well, I like we've talked about in the past, I think the core issue now is that traditional newspapers and traditional media are losing subscribers left and right, and not just politically, but just in general. And they're up against the instantaneous things on social media and Twitter and other areas now where people are getting their news immediately. And instead of doing the type of vetting that they would have done in the past, they're just trying to get things out as quick as possible. And so it is a risk, and that is the thing, is they do have to be careful as we see a president that is purposely trying to undermine the press and the freedom of the press, so they should be more careful. But they're up against a lot of competition right now where people are trying to get the story out first, and that's, you know, in headlines and other things where people are able to communicate in a way that they weren't, you know, even 10 years ago, which goes back to the headlines, you know, the other month with that, and now you have subscribers being able to tweet them and write them, and they're getting those messages where 10 or 15 years ago, you know, it'd be people calling in or sending an email.
Or the letter to the editor. If you go a little further back, when you had to actually, you know, write out the letter, mail it, mm-hmm. and they would know what you thought at best 3 days later.
But I will say that, one, this was an opinion article, and it was buried in the opinion section, so opinions are what they are. But two, I think it also brought up those issues again that happened last year during his confirmation. And you got all these Republicans to now bring it up again because you got Trump to tweet a bunch of things. You've got Mitch McConnell to tweet a bunch of things about it. You see that it gets people upset again in Maine from Susan Collins' vote. And you see how quick that FBI investigation that was so easy to forget about because Trump asked for it to be very quick, like two days. And you can only interview certain people. And it shows, again, going back to what you're saying, Chelsea, the corruption and the ability of being able to shove this Supreme Court justice through without really adequate ability to really check his background and know what was going on. And then you have a very split party line of 50 to 48 vote for someone. So none of that looks good. And I think for a lot of independents, again, a lot of Democrats, even a lot of moderate Republican women especially, it brings up these issues again of how uncomfortable they were with the whole process of how this confirmation happened. I think the media needs to be careful, but I also think it also played exactly into the hands it needed to because it brought it back up into light again. And it's going to be a major issue into 2020 about not only just about the media, but about, you know, the power of being able to appoint Supreme Court justices and how important this is going to be going forward. And the fact that it really was done horribly in this case. And again, he has a right to be impeached too. And so Republicans should be careful because if Democrats get the Senate back and there are things that come to light again, it's not going to happen now, obviously. But in the next couple of years, he could very easily be impeached and removed from being a justice.
Ooh, I don't know about using the word easily, but
I'm saying when Democrats take control. I'm not saying now. I'm saying in several years from now.
Even when the Democrats take control, I still don't know if it would be easily.
But it becomes feasible.
It becomes more feasible in the next, like, you know, I'm not saying right away. I'm saying the next 5-10 years, and more evidence comes out, and you actually have hearings that the ability of being, and you get past this Trump toxicity, hopefully in the Republican Party, and people come back to a little bit more, even though they'll be very separate, that you only need to peel away a couple of Republican votes if the Democrats have the majority, and that you could see a possibility of having him removed. So I don't think this is the last you're going to hear about it. And I do think that whole incident last year, again, started a very dangerous scenario. Again, we're now, Mitch McConnell's changed the rules. You only need bare, simple majority to get a Supreme Court justice on, which looks really bad.
I want to make sure, Chelsea, you can sort of react to what we're talking about here. You know, so we're talking about the New York Times aspect of it. Were people too quick and I'm talking about progressives, obviously, Democrats in particular, too quick to just pick this up and run with it, be like, see, this proves our point, when it actually didn't necessarily prove their point.
Well, I don't know, because I wasn't in that train. I saw it and I was like, oh, okay, well, we'll see how that shakes out. Right. I mean, I guess I didn't see all the wave of everybody, you know, pointing to this as the smoking gun. But I think if we, like Scott was saying, frame this in terms of corruption, this isn't just about Brett Kavanaugh and his bad behavior, although it is. This is about the wider process of how people are vetted and how we make sure that there is actual vetting going on. And let's not forget, well, maybe he would or would not have been nominated in the first place. Maybe it would have been Gorsuch that would mm-hmm. nominated for that place, for that spot. But the Gorsuch seat was, you know, corruptly taken. The Constitution says that the Senate needs to hold confirmation hearings on a nominee. Obama nominated Merrick Garland, and Mitch McConnell did not do that. That for a party, for a country that wants to be very law and order and honor the Constitution, and I mean, that's all I hear a lot of Republicans. We need to read the Constitution and follow. If it's not in the Constitution, you can't do it. If it's in the Constitution, you have to do it. Well, I can't see any other example that's more clear of what's right. in the Constitution that they just elected conveniently not to follow. So we should not be forgetting that detail of the story, that we may not even be talking about Brett Kavanaugh. Maybe. I don't know. That's a
no, but I mean, seat, but. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we are essentially out of time, and I guess there's not that much to say about it. The thing that we didn't get to was the basically the EPA is going to take away this waiver where
states' rights, where
California.
States
well, hang on
rights.
A second.
But also, they're not going to be able to.
Let me just finish saying what it is. Yeah. This idea that California can set its own emission standards, and I believe 12 other states and the District of Columbia also do that. So it's not just California. It is, of course, the sort of thing that will be tied up in court, mm-hmm. regardless of whether or not Donald Trump is reelected. It would be long past the point where he is no longer in office. So as someone who lives in California, and you know, you can sort of see what the air quality looked like, you know, just a couple decades ago. And the fact that, no, the air is not clean here. It is much cleaner than it was. Mm-hmm. And I think that's for a good reason. Look, I mean, I grew up in sort of the, whatever they call that, the airspace. It's not the right term, but you know, near New York City. So it was also strict emission standards there. And there's just some places that you need to have that. And so we're not going to really have the time to talk about it.
But you got our reaction already.
But right. the consensus is it's not happening.
It's not going to happen. And even
we
the
can
car,
certainly talk about it next
automakers
Tuesday.
Are not going to yeah. be happy about it either, because now they're going to have to do two separate
right.
cars.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just, it's stupid for them to try to think
case,
they can get away with that.
That is all of our time for this week, but we will see you next Tuesday. Until then, Chelsea, where can people find you?
At Chelsea Glacier.
And Scott?
At SMN80. That's SMN80.
And you can find me at ChristianDMZ. And don't forget to follow the show at TrumpReportABTV. That's all the time. We'll see everybody next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.